Today, we are welcoming a good friend and very special guest, Diana Doe. Diana is a professor of ophthalmology and vice chair for clinical affairs at the Byers Eye Institute at Stanford University. She's also the clinic chief of ophthalmology at Stanford Healthcare. Diana, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, John. It's always good to have a discussion with you about the latest management of retinal diseases.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Diana, one thing I've always wanted to talk to you about is some of your research actually led to the establishment of the half-life of aflibercept in the eye, the traditional 9 to 11 days. Can you tell us a little bit about that research?
I'd be happy to. I think as clinicians, we always look for more data to try to give us information about the best agent to use for our patients with retinal vascular diseases. To understand the potential advantages of aflibercept 2 milligrams, I conducted a prospective clinical study looking at treatment-naive patients with wet age-related macular degeneration. And in order to determine the half-life of aflibercept 2 milligrams in the eye, I took intraocular aqueous samples from these patients at specific time points. We looked at actually 5 different time points: before treatment, right after treatment with aflibercept 2 milligrams, and then at specific days after aflibercept to determine the intraocular concentration of aflibercept. And what we found in these 5 treatment-naive patients was there was some variability of intraocular half-life, but when we calculated the median half-life, that was around close to about 9 to 11 days in the eye. And when we looked at comparative human data of ranibizumab or of bevacizumab, those intraocular concentrations were lower and on average like 7 to 8 days in the eye. So this new data on aflibercept 2 milligrams gave us more information, and it suggests that aflibercept 2 milligrams has a longer half-life inside the human eye. And that goes along with the clinical data that it could be dosed every 2 months or greater compared to other anti-VEGF agents.
And you mentioned that you saw some variability there, Diana. What were some of the outliers, I guess, as far as their half-life, and can we read anything into that clinically as we see our patients?
Yes. Well, it was a small sample size, 5 patients, and there were some patients where the half-life was much shorter. Maybe it was only about, 7 days in the eye. And it shows us that we still don't know everything that contributes to drug durability in the eye. Is it in a particular patient, do they have a higher VEGF load? Do they excrete the drug outside the eye more quickly? I think there are different variables. And also, does the vitreous play a role? If someone has more liquefied vitreous due to aging, does that also affect the intraocular half-life as well? And I think this correlates to our clinical practice. We have some patients who, when we give them aflibercept 2 milligrams, it has good durability in the eye. We could extend them 2 or 3 months between doses. And there are other patients who, despite giving them aflibercept 2 milligrams, they need to be dosed every 4 or 5 weeks. So we see this variability in our clinical practice.
And this leads us in nicely to talking about higher molar dose, and we'll get there in 1 second. I have one question I've wanted to ask you as well. Should we do away with the concept of non-responders, or are there still patients that have true wet macular degeneration that are non-responders?
I think the definition of non-responders is variable. I don't think there truly is a non-responder, but I think there are people who need frequent dosing. That means that they could be responding to our anti-VEGF agent, but maybe the particular drug only lasts 4 weeks in the eye rather than 8 weeks in the eye. So I wouldn't say that that patient is a non-responder, but just has an extremely high need for frequent treatment.
And is there anything we can do clinically? I remember a few years ago, there was some thought about putting patients on aqueous suppressants, like, a combination timolol dorzolamide drop to try and decrease outflow potentially. I did that in a handful of people, variable responses. Is there anything we can do to increase the durability outside of increasing the dosage?
I don't think there's any clear evidence that we can do something, whether pharmacologically or, systemically, to increase the durability of these agents. And I think that's why our industry collaborators are trying to develop new delivery mechanisms or new anti-VEGF agents, usually with a higher molar dose, that can address some of this durability issues.
So you led us beautifully into the higher molar dose. So we have a higher molar dose agent. We have a couple of them, but specifically one that we're very familiar with, aflibercept 8 milligrams, or it's known in the US as Eylea HD. Tell us about the concept behind 8 milligrams of aflibercept.
I think we recognize that there are these patients who need frequent dosing of aflibercept 2 milligrams, and there certainly is room for improvement. Therefore, scientists started looking at aflibercept 8 milligrams, which is 4 times the molar dose. And when they looked at animal studies, they determined that by increasing the molar dose 4 times, we can extend the intraocular half-life in animals more than 2 to 3 times the duration. And therefore, that gave us the preclinical data to suggest testing it in the human eye. And certainly, we've seen through hundreds of patients tested that when we got to the phase 3 clinical trials of aflibercept 8 milligrams, whether it's for diabetic macular edema or neovascular AMD, they designed these clinical trials to look at 8 milligrams of aflibercept, whether dosed every 12 weeks or every 16 weeks, compared to the gold standard at that time, which is aflibercept 2 milligrams. And we were trying to determine if we dose less frequently with 8 milligrams of aflibercept, could we obtain similar non-inferior visual acuity outcomes at 1 year or at 2 years? And that could provide potential breakthrough for some patients who needed more frequent dosing of their anti-VEGF agent.
And specific to the PHOTON study, which was the DME study, comparing, as you really nicely put, 8 milligrams of aflibercept given monthly for 3 visits and then out to either 12 weeks or 16 weeks in the first year, to our standard, which is the 2 milligrams given every month for 5 months, is a little different than what we do with our wet AMD. And then every other month, what did we see as the primary outcome in that study?
Yes, this randomized clinical trial enrolled, hundreds of patients, and the primary endpoint was looking at the mean change in best corrected visual acuity at week 48. And this was designed as a non-inferiority study. And the results were positive. 8 milligrams of aflibercept, whether dosed every 12 weeks or every 16 weeks, was non-inferior to aflibercept 2 milligrams dosed every 8 weeks. And this study design showed that if you followed these study guidelines, a patient with diabetic macular edema could receive fewer injections, yet on average, obtain the same visual acuity outcomes as 2 milligrams of aflibercept dosed regularly every 8 weeks.
So that leads me to ask, Diana, are you using 8 milligrams in your clinical practice as it's been used in the PHOTON study, or are you deviating a bit from how it was used in the PHOTON study?
I would love to say that I'm using it exactly like the PHOTON study, but in clinical practice, it's a little bit more challenging. First of all, a lot of times we're using aflibercept 8 milligrams in patients who've had prior treatment with other anti-VEGF agents, whether that be aflibercept 2 milligrams or faricimab or bevacizumab. So they're not necessarily treatment naive. In addition, when I'm using it, I'm not using it strictly according to the study protocol with 3 initial loading doses and then extending them right away to every 12 weeks or every 16 weeks. I think that's where we use the art of medicine, John, where we are using it in patients and then trying to see their response and then tailoring our next dose based on their clinical response. Are you using it in the same way?
So no, I'm definitely not using it in the same way as the photon study. I would say I struggle sometimes when I'm looking for good cases to present that are in keeping with the photon study. So I'm finding that there's a variety of benefits to the 8 milligrams. One way I really love using it is if you have a stable patient that's, say, on 8 or 10 week injections of 2 milligrams, knowing the data that you created, the 9 to 11 day half-life data that you discovered. I'm using that half-life data combined with Peter Kaiser's ARVO abstract and presentation that showed that you get an additional 34% durability boost for some reason, we don't know why, to basically treat these patients and bring them back a month later. So you've got a patient that's coming in getting 6 injections a year, and you propose to them, you're not switching medicines, it's the same medicine, just a different dose, and you'll get to come back instead of at 2 months, at 3 months. And that has really worked wonders to debulk my clinical practice. What about you, Diana? What are you finding in some of those tough to treat patients, those patients that are coming back, and you try to get them out to 5 weeks and they're leaking? Are you able to successfully extend those patients out to the 7 weeks that we here in the US have to get them to after those first 3 injections?
Yes, I think there's a variable response. In some of these patients who have very frequent reactivation of the disease, I am able to extend them another 2, 3, or 4 weeks. But there are other patients where, despite giving them 8 milligrams of aflibercept, they still need, every 4 to 5 week administration early on. I'm hoping that over time, after I'm really aggressively treating their diabetic macular edema, I'll eventually be able to extend them. And when we conducted the photon study, these patients in the first year, they could be treated more frequently if they met different disease activity criteria. But the minimum dosing interval was every 8 weeks. So we did a post-hoc analysis to try to figure out, were there some patients who had persistent diabetic macular edema who could be dosed more frequently if the study protocol allowed? And when we looked at this, we found that only 1.5% of patients in the 8 milligram aflibercept group met additional interval shortening in the first year. So it gives me a little bit more confidence that, yes, if I had some of these high need patients, it's only a minority of them who would still need, every 4 week dosing, but the majority could be extended to some interval.
And diabetes and diabetic macular edema is much more forgiving than wet age-related macular degeneration. I feel like we have a little bit of leeway. You don't want to do it constantly, but to let these patients get a little bit worse, and then you can bring them back and try and figure things out. We also have adjuvant steroids that we can use. And I've just started, Diana, to try and in those patients that require more frequent dosing, mixing in a steroid to see if it gives me the ability now to go out to 8, 9, or 10 weeks. Have you had any experience using adjuvant agents with 8 milligrams, and what's been your success rate?
I haven't yet combined intraocular steroids with aflibercept 8 milligrams because I'm still trying to evaluate monotherapy with aflibercept 8 milligrams. But I understand your point because we do have intraocular steroids such as dexamethasone as a good proven treatment option, and I've had success in the past using it in combination with anti-VEGF. What's your early experience with
Yeah,
steroids?
so far I've had some patients that have very recalcitrant edema that mixing in the steroid hasn't been the overnight wow that we all want to see. These are kind of your chronic patients that it takes a long time to get their edema down. But that with time, in the handful of patients that I've used combination therapy, I've seen an improved response anatomically that is very persuasive, and it's given me the ability to actually go out to 7 to 8 weeks. I think the key is to just stick with it. And jumping around from anti-VEGF to anti-VEGF maybe isn't necessarily The answer, but that combination and time seems to actually, and consistent anti-VEGF agent on board does seem to make a difference.
Yes, I agree. Like if I'm going to switch a patient from aflibercept, let's say 2 milligrams to aflibercept 8 milligrams, I'm going to commit to using this new agent for several treatments. I'm not just going to give one injection, expect a wow effect, and then go forward. If I don't see that wow effect, I'm not going to stop and then switch to another agent. I think you have to try multiple doses before really deciding to switch to another medicine, to give the new medicine at least a shot before switching again.
And Diana, what about safety in the photon study? You know, I often worry if there is a systemic safety signal that we're going to see it in the diabetic patients because they're vascular paths and oftentimes they're getting bilateral injections. Should we be concerned about higher dose of aflibercept from a systemic safety standpoint? And then secondly, the pressure issue. It's a higher volume of medicine going in the eyes. Do we need to have concerns about that?
Those are good questions. Of course, people are always concerned if we increase the molar dose by 4 times, is there any safety signal? When we look at a large population of patients who received aflibercept 8 milligrams, not just in the photon study, but let's say we combine the Pulsar wet AMD study and the Candela phase two study, we first looked at any safety signals related to hypertension because anti-VEGF agents can also lead to elevation in blood pressure. In these hundreds of patients, we did not see a safety signal related to hypertension, and the rates of blood pressure rise were similar between aflibercept 2 milligrams or aflibercept 8 milligrams. So that was reassuring. In terms of intraocular safety, we also saw that the rates of intraocular inflammation were extremely low, around 1%. And that was similar to what we saw in aflibercept 2 milligrams. So that's also reassuring. And finally, if we look at cases of, let's say, ischemic optic neuropathy or retinal vasculitis, there were no cases of those seen with aflibercept 8 milligrams. So again, reassuring. Let's talk about intraocular pressure. Aflibercept 8 milligrams is 70 microliters, which is slightly higher than the 50 microliters we use for aflibercept 2 milligrams. In these studies, we did not see any persistent elevated intraocular pressure rise in those patients on aflibercept 8 milligrams. So it appears that the 70 microliter volume does not lead to any elevated intraocular pressure over time or any safety signals related to IOP.
Wow, that's fantastic. And that's very, very reassuring. I think that safety of the drug combined with familiarity of the drug gives us just a great deal of confidence. Diana, last question. What meetings are you going to go to and what data are you presenting at those meetings this year?
I'm looking forward to the American Society of Retina Specialists because we're going to be looking at more data, not just on aflibercept 8 milligrams, but there are a lot of new agents being tested, in clinical trials. Specifically for aflibercept 8 milligrams, we're going to share some additional data when we look at baseline visual acuity, whether you start off with vision worse than 20/50 or better than 20/50, and does that affect outcomes over time? In addition, at the Retina Society in the fall, we'll be presenting more data on population pharmacokinetics. Looking at the data that Dr. Peter Kaiser presented at ARVO and looking at how we can use systemic pharmacokinetic data and try to extrapolate that to what happens inside the eye.
Oh, I'm so interested in pharmacokinetics. It's such an interesting field, and there's so much that we can learn about it. So I'm so appreciative of you, Diana. I want to tell our listeners, if you see Diana at a conference, please feel free to approach her. She is as nice in real life as she is on this podcast. Diana,
Thank you so much.
thank you for joining us, and please tune in to episodes with Dr. Peter Kaiser and Dr. David Brown. Thank you, Diana, for coming on.
It's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you, John.